Right, so we've been in a series on the Ten Commandments, and today we reach the Eighth Commandment, almost there. One of the things that we've been saying is that these commandments are for Christians. People today tend to have two very opposing views on the Ten Commandments. Some people say, you know, that was for back then. This is today. We are smarter now. We've got to adapt to the cultural conditions of our time. You know, back then, to follow those laws, yeah, that made sense. But now, these are old and outdated. Some people say that. Other people say, you know, most of the time, I try to live by the Ten Commandments. I try to be honest. I try not to steal or kill. You know, maybe sometimes I lie. You know, even Christians sometimes say this. You know, it's I try to obey. I try to follow. So people either reject the Ten Commandments because they consider them culturally irrelevant, or they say they're easy to keep because they're so easy to keep that they don't really matter. You know, they're just common sense. So we shouldn't have a 30-minute sermon on something so obvious. So how should Christians view the Ten Commandments? You know, remember, these are Moses' words to the Israelites before they enter the Promised Land. The Israelites are going across the river to receive this Promised Land, and before they do that, God reminds them of the covenant. For the entire community, he says, this is how I want you to live in that land. Now, what does that mean for us? That means Christians need the Ten Commandments. And Christians need them as a guide to faithful living. What does it look like to live as a Christian? What are some practical things that I can do as a Christian? Well, you get them right here in the Ten Commandments. And today we reach the Eighth Commandment, which says, you shall not steal. What is this commandment about? You know what the sermon is about. It's about your Napster days. All that time you spent on LimeWire, downloading. Stop it. yeah, I guess. You know, you probably deleted that program a long time ago. It's not just about that. This sermon is, this passage is about how we treat our wealth. How we use our money, our resources, our possessions. God says there's a right way to use our money, and he wants the entire community to model faithful, economic servanthood before him. God gives to you generously, and therefore, if you're a Christian, you've got to serve him with your wealth. As a Christian, you've got to use your finances in a way that points back to the true God. And to see what that means, let's consider three things that we see in this passage. In this passage, we see the gift of property, the society of justice, and the dependable God. So point one, the gift of property. Point two, the society of justice. And point three, the dependable God. First, the gift of property. You know, this commandment is pretty simple. You shall not steal. And this entire idea of stealing actually presupposes that individual ownership is valid. You see, the possibility of stealing requires a previous concept of ownership. So what is ownership? Ownership establishes boundaries and access. So, you know, here's my iPod full of songs that I paid 99 cents for each in 2008. I got it on the iTunes store. It's mine. This belongs to a specific person. And you first need the concept of ownership to even get to the concept of stealing. Well, what is stealing? Stealing is taking something that doesn't belong to you. You know, it's when you take something that belongs to somebody else. So here's 2008 again. Here's this poor kid. He's got the iPad, iPod, whatever, with his name inscribed in it, monogrammed, whatever. And you sneak it into your jean pocket, and you take it home. That's stealing. You take something that belongs to another person. And here, God is calling his people to respect the property of other people. But there is a prior truth that we have to deal with here, and that is the reality that everything on this planet belongs to God. Everything you have, it's given from God's hand. Yeah, you have to work for it. God instructs us to use our labor and our hands to get the fruit of your labor. Everything, all property that you have, though, is a gift from God. But you also have to work for it. And where do you get the capacity to work? Well, even that's a gift. You know, your hands, your brain, your eyes, your Microsoft Excel skills, your video editing skills, whatever, that's a gift from God. And what do these skills get you in the end? You know, you make some money, you go to the store, you buy a piece of chocolate because you earned it. God gives us abilities and resources because we need to, and we need these resources and abilities to make stuff, to produce stuff. And because God gives us these resources and abilities, the Bible calls us to use them to enhance His reputation. And what does it mean to enhance God's reputation? Let me put it simply. It means acting in a way that makes the God of the Bible look good, look attractive. And one of the ways that we do that is by treating all property as a gift from God. Everything that you have is a gift from God. But many Christians don't do this. You know, how do a lot of people in the church tend to treat their resources and property? This belongs to me. This is my money. I earned it. And, you know, maybe you learned some stuff in the youth group as a kid. You had a good pastor, and he taught you, hey, this 10%, that belongs to God. That 90%, that's for you. That's for your spending, but make sure you give that 10%. And if 90% belongs to you, if you think that 90% is all yours, then you haven't really understood the creation narratives, Genesis 1 and 2. You've got the wrong attitude about your stuff. Where did all your stuff come from? Where did you get your resources, your ability to produce, your education? Ultimately, if you trace it out, it came from God Himself. We have a pretty complex economic system today. Most likely in your job or your future job, you do most of your work on a computer. But when you break it down, all the economy is pretty simple. There is production and there's consumption. You know, there's supply and demand. You learned it in your class. And what do we consume? You know, if you think about it, all the stuff that you consume comes from the ground. Now, that breakfast that you ate this morning, the bread and the eggs, they came from the ground. You know, the chicken, they had to eat corn from the ground. That cotton sweatshirt that you're wearing came from the ground. Where does Diet Coke come from? You ever think about that? I think it comes straight from heaven, but I might be wrong. Just kidding. You know, you need water. That comes from the ground. And aspartame. Aspartame is an amino acid, which comes from aspartic acid, isolated from the molecule compounds in asparagus juice. Where do asparagus plants come from? The ground. Thank God for asparagus. Now, why do you work your job? It's because you want to buy stuff that grows on the ground. Yeah, you know, you're not a farmer or anything like that, but you produce and you consume stuff from the ground. Those are the basic elements of production and consumption. You sit at your computer, you create Excel sheets or whatever, you provide value that people want, and then you use that money to buy stuff from the ground. Now, why do you need to know that? Well, that's to show that 90% of the stuff, the money in your bank account, doesn't belong to you. Everything you get, 100% of it is from God's hand, and you are entirely dependent on God for everything that you have. Now, don't you see how fragile, how dependent you are? If you're a Christian, you have to see your stuff the way God sees it. All of it belongs to God. So that's the first thing that we see, the gift of property. All property is a gift, everything that you have. Now, point two, the society of justice. You know, every time we read these commandments, we read the first six verses together. And that's to show this is not a simple prohibition on shoplifting. You know, there's a whole community involved here, and this envisions an entire society that is committed to social justice. In the context, the people of Israel are called to live with a deep concern for the poor, the vulnerable, the weak. So it's not a simple ban on shoplifting. There's a whole community involved. You know, it's pretty obvious that shoplifting is wrong. You know, if a bunch of guys here went after church to Best Buy, stole a bunch of USB cards or whatever, it wouldn't really be good for the reputation of the gospel or Christianity. You know, today, what do most people steal if they go shoplifting? You know, theft is pretty common among employees of a company. So I learned recently, if you work for Bloomingdale's, what do these employees steal? Employees, apparently, they steal the high profit margin items, luxury goods, Burberry, Gucci, just kidding, Gucci, Louis Vuitton, Louis Vuitton. Yeah, we have to remember, the Israelites didn't have luxury goods back then. You know, they weren't stealing luxury goods from each other. This was an agrarian and subsistence culture. Gordon McConville, he's a British Old Testament scholar, he points out that people entering the Promised Land didn't have that much stuff. They were landless people, limited property, and that limited property was a necessary means for survival. That means the substance of the economy should be used responsibly for the good of the whole community. So if you didn't have that much property, what kind of property did you own? Well, you owned the stuff that helped you produce. You owned ox. You owned something to grind your grain. You owned agricultural equipment to help your plants grow, to pick stuff up from the ground. And what happens if you steal this stuff? If you steal this stuff from another person, you take away that person's livelihood. When you stole in the context of a poor society, you basically took away their means to existence. You took away their primary means of production, and that means you took away their life. And therefore, what God requires here in this commandment is far broader than simple theft. You know, yeah, don't steal his Gucci shoes, but this commandment envisions a group of people that is committed to the well-being and the flourishing of the entire community. Now, this goes right along with what God did in their recent history. What did Israel experience in their recent history? If you think back, they experienced the miracle of the Exodus. And what is the Exodus? It was an experience of economic oppression. They were poor. Back in Egypt, they were the free labor force for Pharaoh. They were treated harshly, and they cried out to God for economic salvation. And God saved the weak and the helpless. So the Exodus story is a story about relief from economic oppression. God saved the poor and the weak. And God calls Israel to be a community that imitates his care and his concern for the poor. When you look at Israelite law, you know, in God's eyes, all these laws about the poor, human life matters more than material possessions. See, it's more important that your neighbor lives than you get a lot of stuff. And this was strange. This was peculiar in the ancient Near Eastern cultures. In the other ancient Near Eastern cultures, they had much sharper penalties for theft. But in Israel, in Israel's law, if you steal, you pay back. You know, if you steal, maybe you have to return two times what you owe. But it's never harsh. So, for example, Exodus 21. Let's say you have an ox. Your ox goes crazy, he gores another ox that belongs to your neighbor. The law is actually relatively lenient. Yeah, you have to pay your neighbor back with another ox. You know what happens in the same scenario in the Code of Hammurabi? The Code of Hammurabi, the ancient Mesopotamian law code of Babylon. The Babylonians, they live near Israel. So what does the Code of Hammurabi say? If you steal, you got to pay back 30 times the original value. So if your ox kills another ox, then you're basically done financially. You will be a slave for the rest of your life. But the Bible sees human life as more valuable than property. God cares for the poor. You know, Deuteronomy is realistic about the distribution of wealth. The whole Bible is realistic about the distribution of wealth. The Bible knows this is a fallen world. There's going to be some people who make it and some people who don't. Wealth is going to be distributed unequally. You know, some people are going to have a really good season of rain, and others will barely produce anything. And in those situations, sometimes people had to sell themselves into slavery. But in Israelite law, there was slavery, but it was always a temporary slavery. These poor people had to work off their debt, but it was never permanent. There was a sabbatical year. That means the slave worked for 6 years, and then in the seventh year, they went free. In the seventh year, God commanded the Israelites to release all debts. That means nobody owes you anything in the seventh year. And listen to what God says in Deuteronomy 15. If among you, one of your brothers should become poor in any of your towns within your land that the Lord your God has given you, you shall not harden your heart or shut your hand against your poor brother. But you shall open your hand to him and lend him sufficient for his need, whatever it may be. Take care lest there be an unworthy thought in your heart, and you say, the seventh year, the year of release is near, and your eye look grudgingly on your poor brother, and you give him nothing, and he cry to the Lord against you, and you be guilty of sin. You shall give to him freely, and your heart shall not be grudging when you give to him, because for this the Lord your God will bless you in all your work, in all that you undertake. For there will never cease to be poor in the land. Therefore I command you, you shall open wide your hand to your brother, to the needy and to the poor in your land. Now, this means if it's the sixth year, and a guy comes to you and he says, hey, let me borrow some money, you can't deny him, no matter what the cause of his poverty. See, the law calls for compassion for the vulnerable, for the weak. God cares for the poor, and he calls his people to do the same. Now, this is especially relevant for 21st century society, because what do we tend to do? We accumulate wealth for personal fulfillment. We spend for self-centered reasons. And applying this commandment to ourselves, what would it look like if we obeyed this commandment? What would it look like if we were a community that practiced the opposite of theft? What is the opposite of theft? It's generosity. And what if our entire church prized human flourishing over material prosperity? Well, you know, you wouldn't be so obsessed or anxious about your career. See, if you pour yourself into your job and making more money, why do you want more money? You want more money so you can take care of yourself. And what do you want? Well, you know, these days, maybe it's better technology. You want a new computer. But a lot of times, you want that money so you can have a nicer experience. Like fine dining, beautiful restaurants, a beautiful vacation with your friends that you can post on Instagram. Or maybe, you know, you just want a nicely padded bank account. Now, none of these things are bad. But if you prioritize them over human flourishing, you are violating this commandment. If you are single-mindedly zoning in on your career advancement, and you forget about the things that really matter, then you're disobeying this commandment. What are the things that really matter? According to the Bible, it's the people around you. It's your local community. See, what really matters in God's eyes? Love for human beings. Human flourishing matters more than material prosperity. And as a church, we have got to get the same vision that God has. See, what does God envision in this commandment? A community that practices self-sacrifice. A community that practices self-sacrifice for the good of others. A community where personal advancement always takes second place over people. And you know what that would look like? Don Carson, he's a New Testament scholar. He's at Trinity Divinity School in Chicago. He writes a lot of books, and he supervises a lot of PhD dissertations in his graduate program. And at a certain point, his wife was diagnosed with breast cancer. And it was so bad, you know, her body wasn't, she was allergic to the anti-nausea medication that the doctors were giving her. So they rescheduled all of his classes, because he had to take care of his wife. All of his classes were in the morning, and then he went home in the afternoons. And as a PhD supervisor, it is very common to get chapter submissions from your students. You know, they're writing this dissertation, they want you to check and revise and edit. So every month, your students come to you, but for about 8 months, he didn't receive any chapters from his PhD students, and he thought it was strange. So he went to one of his secretaries, and, you know, he said, yeah, it's kind of strange. I haven't received a chapter to review for a long time now. And the secretary said to him, you know, I'm not supposed to tell you this, but all of the PhD students agreed together not to submit any chapters for as long as you and your wife are struggling with this. And you know why that was so significant? A lot of these PhD students, they set back their graduation dates by an entire year because they cared for Carson and his wife. They chose to put themselves at a personal disadvantage in their career because they prized human well-being over personal gain. They gave up money and time for people. And that is a mini picture of a society of justice. A society of justice is where people give themselves sacrificially because they prize human flourishing, because they value the same things that God values. And what is the opposite of stealing? It's giving without asking in return. It is the opposite of a self-centered people. But look, the Bible is realistic about the problem of greed. You know, this society of justice, it's ideal. But, you know, this commandment also tells us, another thing that it tells us is that human beings have a natural tendency to greed. Otherwise, this commandment would just be unnecessary. But it is necessary here for us, for all of us, because human beings are greedy. See, the only reason why anyone ever steals is greed. What is greed? Greed is an inordinate longing for wealth or status or power. But it's tough because nobody thinks they're greedy. You know, greed is not like adultery. You know when you're committing adultery. You know, this is not my wife. But nobody knows when they're being greedy. And that's why Jesus says in Luke chapter 12, watch out, be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Why do you have to watch out? Well, because most of the time, you don't think you're being greedy. Nobody considers themselves greedy. You know, when you think of greed, you probably think of people on Wall Street or Mr. Krabs from SpongeBob. You know, in one episode of SpongeBob, there was this episode, Squidward, he gets a vacation day, a day off. And Mr. Krab, owner of the Krusty Krab, a famous place where you could get Krabby Patties, it's that burger shop. And in the episode, SpongeBob, he knocks over a cash register, and all the money, you know, it just goes spilling on the ground. And Mr. Krab, he starts picking up all the coins and rinsing them all underwater. And SpongeBob, he comes to the side, and he surprises Mr. Krab, and he drops a dime down the drain. And Mr. Krab, he sticks his claw into the drain, and he won't let go of that dime. And then he loses his arm. That is what we think of when we think of greed. You think of somebody who is so miserly, so cheap, that he won't even spare a penny. A greedy person is somebody who is so obsessed that they can't depart with a dime. You know, he is the antagonist, and the protagonist is somebody like SpongeBob who doesn't really care about money. But in the real world, you know that most people, most human beings, are a mixture of the protagonist and the antagonist. See, there is a hidden greed and a consumerism, but it's not overblown and exaggerated like Mr. Krabs. You're a mix of both. See, in the real world, how do we spend our money? You know, years back in the New York Times, there was an article about extravagant bar mitzvahs. Bar mitzvahs are a celebration for young Jewish boys when they make it to the age of 13, and they become sons of the law. But I guess this one bar mitzvah cost the parents $50,000. And a Jewish woman, she wrote to the New York Times, she was puzzled by the irony. You know, this is supposed to be a celebration of the son of the commandment. But the underlying message seemed to celebrate greed and money and consumerism. And you know, the point is not about the bar mitzvah. That kind of bar mitzvah is common. I'm sure you've been to one of those. But it's only common because our broader culture encourages that kind of thinking. And Christians tend to buy into the same type of thinking. More vacations. More posts about the great things that you get to do. More stuff. So we hoard. We accumulate. And you ignore the stuff that really matters. Other people. See, if you look at the church, Christians are greedy too. And Christians only care about other people when it benefits them. And the only way that we will become a society of justice is if you recognize the greed in your own heart. See, unless you see the greed in your own heart, we as a community will never become a society of justice. So that's point two, the society of justice. Now, how do we become that kind of society? We need point three. You got to change your thinking. And in particular, you got to change your thinking about God. Is God dependable? Does God actually provide adequately for our needs? In the Old Testament, there's an example of a guy who didn't think so, and it's in 1 Kings chapter 21. It was a guy named Ahab, who was the king of Samaria, the northern kingdom of Israel. And he has a neighbor, Naboth, and he says, hey, you know, I like your land. I want to use it as a vegetable garden. Let me buy it. And back then, land was not transferable. In Israel, you couldn't sell your land. The land was your inheritance. It was a gift from God to each family. So you weren't allowed to sell your land. So what does Ahab do? He takes it by force. Ahab is the king, so he executes the poor guy, and he takes his piece of land. Now, he does this even though he's the king, even though he has a bunch of land already. God gave him land, but he wants more stuff. This is a guy who took by force, at the expense of human life. Ahab did not think that God was dependable, and he forgot about the larger picture of what he already had. Now, as Christians, What will make us generous? Well, you have to see your own inheritance. How do you do that? Ed Clowney was a pastor of this church, Grace OPC. He was also the president of Westminster back in the day. He wrote a book on the Ten Commandments. And he wrote about how Jesus transforms the Ten Commandments. You know what Christians have as their inheritance? He says we get God Himself. We get a different, a lasting treasure, and that is Jesus Christ. And only if God is the most precious treasure of your heart will you become generous. Only if Jesus Christ and His kingdom become the joy of your heart will you give yourself sacrificially to others. And only if you know that God is dependable will you not hoard at the expense of others. And how can you know that God is dependable? Well, because Jesus Christ does the very opposite of what Ahab does to Naboth. You know, King Ahab kills Naboth. Ahab gets the land at the expense of another person's life. But on the cross, Jesus Christ gives the inheritance to us at the cost of His own life. See, on the cross, He paid the expense. And what is the expense that we owe for our greed? Rejection from the kingdom. We deserve to be left to our cold, greedy, hoarding hearts. But on the cross, this generous King took on Himself what sinful people deserve. And only when you know His sacrificial love will you become generous. You know, in Victor Hugo's novel, Les Miserables, he writes about, it's a story about Jean Valjean. And Valjean is a criminal from the peasant class. He got into prison for stealing bread, and now he's out. People know he's a former convict because he's got this ID card with a yellow stamp or something. So the innkeepers won't let him stay at their inns. So he's bitter, he's angry, he's out in the cold. But there's a bishop in the town who gives him shelter. And Valjean goes to the bishop's house, he sees a bunch of nice stuff, and he steals his silverware. And he runs. The police catch him, and they take him back. And you know what the bishop does? The bishop tells the police, hey, I gave this stuff to him as a gift. And he tells Valjean, remember to use the money from this, from all the stuff that I gave you, the silverware, to become an honest man. See, the bishop spared Valjean from death, and that transforms the rest of his life. He was a thief who was transformed by sacrificial love, and later Valjean becomes a person who sacrifices himself for others. And what will turn you into a person of sacrificial love? You've got to see the sacrificial love in the gospel. See, the God of the universe came down and took the very punishment that we deserve. We're self-centered people. We're the hoarders, the rich antagonists, the people who accumulate wealth and possession for ourselves. But Jesus gave His own life to give us an inheritance. Do you see that you're a self-centered hoarder? You know, trying to change and become a good person is not enough. You need an encounter with this power, with this sacrificial love, to transform the desires of your heart. God gave that to us in Jesus Christ. Receive that, believe in His love, and get a heart that truly cares for human flourishing. Let's pray. Our Father, thank You for what this passage teaches us and what it envisions of a community, Your people. Father, we admit that we fall short of this all the time. God, we don't steal because we live in the middle class suburbs. Lord, but we do steal by our lack of generosity, by our love for hoarding, Lord, by the way that we use our money only for ourselves. Father, help us to see that everything is a gift from You, and help us to see the true gift, this amazing gift that You gave us, the gift of infinite worth, Jesus Christ Himself. Help us to see that You gave Your life for us, and respond with thanksgiving and joy. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.